California, home of Walt Disney's frozen head. It's the Mark Maron Show. And now he's a big disgrace and he's kicking his can all over the place. Mark Maron!
All right, good evening, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, lurking conservatives, how are you? Good evening to you people who are saying, who the hell's this guy coming out of my radio on Progressive Talk 1150? Well, folks, it's me, Mark Maron. This is the new show. We're coming to you live from Burbank, California. That's California, the land of no seasons and the unfounded confidence zombies. And, of course, all you good progressive folks out there, that's my buddy Jim Earle. You heard initially. How are you, Jim?
I'm fine, Mark.
Nice. Well, good. Cheer up, will you? It's our first show. How are you? Nice to see you.
It's a great honor being here across the street from Jay Leno's monologue.
Isn't that unbelievable? We are here in the newly equipped elevated bunker in the Clear Channel Radio Mill. We overlook the lovely NBC studios where the illusion is manufactured daily, folks. That's like, it's like overlooking real show business. Just over there, Jim. That's where they make the TV.
Is that where we're going to be someday?
No, sir. We are here in the cave. We are here in the subterranean world of radio, my friend. Now, I'm not judging here, of course. I have jumped at the opportunity to be part of the televised delusion many times in my career. Sometimes when I surface from the radio cave, I occasionally enjoy doing the funny from the idiot box in front of the people looking at me between their feet. I've sold my share of soap, friends, but not now. I'm very excited to be here. I'm very excited to be on the air in Los Angeles. I'm happy to be back for the past couple of months, folks. Jim and I have been wandering the wilderness, just scaling the great void, waiting for the go-ahead. And believe me, we walk into the studio tonight. This was beautiful. So a lot of people from our old show, from Morning Sedition, which used to air here at 3 in the morning, it was the morning show out of New York, have sent us flowers. A woman sent us flowers. She's here, let me read what it says. Yay, technically this is the show's birthday. Glad you're back, Sally of Burbank. And this is like high-end flowers. This isn't just the, you know, the crappy 1-800-Flowers flowers. These are beautiful flowers. She said she called in on our last and final Morning Sedition show. She called in. Her daughter was on the crew of the last Lord of the Rings movie in New Zealand, where she told us they used to listen to us out there. Well, it's lovely to be here. Thank you for the beautiful flowers. You were the only one that sent anything. Not even a little something from my mom, from my dad, from Air America back in New York, but these lovely flowers Sally of Burbank. She will be from here on known as Sally of Burbank. So as I said, some of you are familiar with my work as a stand-up. Some of you know Morning Sedition. Some of you are just pissed that you're hearing me and not what you usually hear. That'll pass, or you folks will go away. I hope you don't. It's your call. We'd love you to stay. The show is basically going to be, we're going to mix it up. We're going to have a little news, a lot of funny, a bit of variety with some occasional panic, neurotic rage, depending on my mental disposition at the time. We'll have songs from the wonderful, cantankerous, progressive Jim Earle over there. Little Jimmy Earle will be doing some singing occasionally. And tonight, I guess the theme has to be rebirth and redemption because we are here. Mardi Gras is going on. We got a lot of stuff going on. I wanted first to also, we got the flowers, but I also got this the other day from one of the beautiful progressive people. You know, the progressive tent is a large tent, and there are all types of, I'm not going to say freaks and weirdos, but I say that in a proud way. And I enjoy all the different types of people that listen to the network. And I got this. It's hard to tell whether this is a positive thing or a negative thing, because it sort of sounds like a positive thing. But I get this email from someone named Victoria, and this is the email. Was Nancy Reagan involved in this timing? I ask because you are launching on the astrological upside right after Monday's new moon, always good for germinating seeds. However, the downside, you are actually birthing on the 28th, while that moon is what they call void of course. What does that even mean? The moon is void of course. Described thusly, from the beginning to end of void, many believe it is unwise to begin projects or make decisions. So, guys, how about considering the first week or so live practice or previews and then make some big deal birthday soon thereafter? Just trying to do some guardian angel work there. How about just trying to throw the bad mojo on my head? I mean, what are we going to say to the people here at Progressive Talk 1150? Hey, you know, Victoria thinks that the moon's going to be in void or it's going to be a little off course and it might not be a good idea to start the show on that particular night. Can we push it forward a few days till the moon regrooves on its tracks? But I do, again, see, I'm not going to judge because I do appreciate it because I think that was meant to be a positive thing. A lot has happened in the world today, folks, and we want to make sure you're not caught off guard. We want to keep you up on the current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. According to a new book, President Bush admits that Osama bin Laden helped him win re-election in 2004 by releasing a videotape just 3 days before the election. At first, the Bush campaign worried that bin Laden's 11th-hour diatribe might hurt him, so just to be on the safe side, they rigged the votes in Ohio. Sources close to bin Laden say he now realizes he should have endorsed Nader. Anna Nicole Smith appeared before the Supreme Court today in an attempt to inherit part of her late husband's billion-dollar fortune. During their brief marriage, Marshall showered the former stripper with $3 million in jewelry, $700,000 in clothes, and $8,600 in tips. The Rolling Stones will hold their first ever concert in China this April. Tickets will range from $38 to $375, or in Chinese currency, $5 to $10. And that's Mark Maron's Short Order News for tonight. As I said, folks, tonight is Fat Tuesday. It is the last day of the Mardi Gras celebration, the pre-Lent vice and gorging ritual before the period of denial and atonement. But more importantly, it is the first Mardi Gras since Katrina leveled New Orleans while the neocon death cult fiddled. Now, a little later in the show, we're going to try to check in with a buddy of mine down there, Mr. Wild Bill Dyke. He's a comic. I'm going to be involved with him on a big event we're doing down there in April 7th. I'm going down to New Orleans to do a big benefit with Wild Bill Dyke, and I'm going to try and get him on the phone in a little while. But he was funny because I talked to him yesterday. He says, "Oh man, you know, it's going to be the last night, man. Yeah, try and call me on my cell, but I might be a little crispy." So we might be talking to a crispy Bill Dyke down there in New Orleans. A little later in the show, we'll be talking to Josh Olson, the Oscar-nominated screenwriter of A History of Violence, a movie that I really thought was one of the more provocative movies I've seen lately. But it's not politically provocative. It's not like Syriana or Good Night and Good Luck. But it's morally provocative on a personal level. I mean, do you ever ask yourself the question, like, how bad is bad? How bad have I been? What have I done in my life? Am I beyond redemption? Well, that movie certainly pushes the envelope, and I'm excited to have Josh here. Another landmark of tonight, of February 28th, it is my anniversary. I've been married 2 years. 2 years. Thank you. Don't applaud or clap or congratulate me or anything, Jim. Just look at me like you're thinking about something else. 2 years, Jim, I've been married. 2 years.
I'm thinking about Sally of Burbank still, you know.
Sally and
what
Burbank
about
and
Sally
a lovely
Burbank.
Sally and Burbank. I tell you, I know good flowers, and these are beautiful flowers. I'm going to take. I think I'll leave these in the studio because I'd like Stephanie Miller to enjoy them in the morning. I'm going to leave them for everybody to enjoy here at Progressive Talk 1150. I want them to see the lovely flowers.
2 years, I can't believe it.
Oh, you just caught up.
Yeah,
thank you.
Two years.
That's a redemption story in itself. I'm amazed that I've been married 2 years. But let's talk. We'll get
You're
to that
amazed.
In a little while. No, I mean, it's a great thing, and it is my second marriage. I have no kids. I have four cats, as some of my listeners know. I'll tell those stories another time. We're just trying to get established here. But it has been 2 years, and it's been a wonderful 2 years. I will say that. So let's talk about New Orleans a minute before we try to call Bill Dyke. Now, two-thirds of the $3.27 billion raised by nonprofit organizations to help the victims of Katrina has been used up. It's been used in a good way. It's been used to help victims of disaster with things like food, shelter, medical care, home repair, school supplies. Now, the $1 billion in change that is left is going to be needed to basically attempt to rebuild the entire social structure of New Orleans. Things like job training, mental health counseling, rebuilding entire neighborhoods, putting an arts infrastructure back together. Now, despite the fact that $200 billion more in government aid will be required over the long haul, and if it's up to this administration, who knows how that money's going to be used? Who knows whose hands it's going to fall into? But apparently some of the money has been going the right places. And despite the fact that New Orleans Mayor Ray Nagin has sought foreign aid, folks, foreign aid to rebuild New Orleans, despite the pain and grief of that city, that city has been through, Mardi Gras goes on. And the frayed but not beaten spirit of New Orleans is dancing in all its regalia. And I hear it's been, they keep showing people on the news. Mm-hmm. They have newscasters down there, but you never really get a sense of the real people that are down there. Can we try and get Wild Bill Dyke on the phone in New Orleans? Just try and give him a call. I know this is the last night, so I don't know if we're going to be able to get in touch with him. But he might be a little crispy. Okay, I warned you. Yeah. Hey, how's it going?
Yeah, I'm good, man. How are you?
Who's this? Is this Trisha?
No.
I'm looking for Wild Bill. Is he there?
He is, but he's in the bathroom. What are you doing?
We're calling from California.
Wow.
How's it going down there?
You know what? Bill will be out in like 2 more minutes.
I'll call him back.
You call him back in like 2 minutes.
Okay.
All right.
Bye. I guess we're gonna have to get back to Bill in a few. She sounded wasted. Am I right? Did she sound wasted, Jim?
Yeah, she did. Very unprofessional.
No, I wish I were down there. I think it's very encouraging. It sounded like she was having a great time. Now, I don't know if you realize this, but more than half the population in New Orleans is not living in New Orleans anymore. Apparently, there's like only half the hotels available. So I'm just wondering if there were people, you know, camping out on the streets. I have no idea what it was like, but I'm sort of inspired that people are actually out there doing it. I think it's important to the city. I think that it's great that they're doing that. You know, have you ever been there? Have you ever been to Mardi Gras?
Yes, we had a gig. We had a gig in Texas, and we ran through New Orleans for 12 hours.
So that was it? Was it during Mardi Gras? Or you just
stay at a cheap hotel outside of town. Uh-huh. And we went in there and had some hurricanes and walked around the streets.
Well, that's a great story, Jim. Do you remember anything about it? Did anything eventful happen?
Okay, thanks a lot, Mark. You know, I was beaten up, robbed, mugged.
See, now that's a party. You see, did you have beads? Did you get beads?
It was a party for those five guys, sure.
Did somebody give you beads?
Beads
and a bloody nose? Come on, Jim.
I had to take beads out of one part of me, yes.
Oh, man. Why do we have to? We're going to try and get Bill on the phone and just, We got a couple of things coming up. We got Josh Olson, who I'm very much looking forward to. He is the screenwriter who was nominated for an Oscar for A History of Violence. We're going to have a weekly remembrance with Mort Mortensen, who we haven't heard from in a while. I'm very thrilled to be here on Progressive Talk 1150 here in Los Angeles. I'm just thrilled, and I hope you guys are thrilled as well. We're going to try to call Wild Bill Dyke, you know, in just a couple of minutes. And, you know, we're taking your calls if you'd like to give us a call. I know I have the number right here in front of me, 877-520-1150, if you want to check in and say hello. So I think, Jim, now this is going to be a ritual with us, right? You're going to be playing us out of every break with your guitar.
Man. Yeah.
Now, how long have you been playing guitar there, Jim?
I've been playing for like 25 years, man.
25 years?
Self-taught.
And do you write your own music, or is it all just Beatle-based stuff?
I write my own stuff. It's
all right,
heavily influenced.
So why don't you play us out? It's coming up on 20 past the hour, and this is Jim Earle.
Mark Maron Show. It's the Mark Maron Show. Mark Maron Show. Mark Maron Show. Good God Almighty! Damn, who tuned this up? Mark Maron Show, it's on the radio. Have you ever wondered what happened to the guy who invented light beer? Well, he's dead. That's Mort Mortensen's weekly remembrance coming up next. And now, back to a guy who lives in a van across the street from me, Mark Maron!
Oh, thank you, Jim. Thank you very much. We're live here on Progressive Talk, AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. It's our first night. It is my anniversary. It is the birthday of my new show. It is the last night of Mardi Gras. It is a big day. I'm glad that the people down in New Orleans are having a good time and transcending that pain and grief with a little spirit, a little New Orleans spirit. We're going to try and get a hold of Wild Bill Dyke in just a little while. He's a buddy of mine down there in New Orleans. We tried to get hold of him a few minutes ago, and we got some woman who said he was in the bathroom, and she sounded a little drunk, but I'm glad they are having a good time. Here, folks, every week we take a moment to reflect in our times of sorrow as we look back on the lives of the recently departed. Here now is grief correspondent Mort Mortensen with our weekly remembrance. You okay?
Yeah, all right. It's been a long time.
Yeah, you okay? You sad? Or?
I know I got allergies.
Oh, okay.
I got allergies in the last rain. Rain okay. shower?
Yeah, sure, sure.
A lot of mold and mildew.
Yeah, I understand.
Rebecca Ward Carranza, inventor of the tortilla chip. Rebecca Carranza, creator of the first tortilla chip, died of a heart attack last month after accidentally eating a priceless plate of nachos in the shape of the Virgin Mary. Witnesses say her body was found cracked and soggy, lying face down in a half-eaten bowl of picante sauce.
Oh, boy.
Surrounded by a bunch of teenage boys, too insecure to leave the snack table to go mingle with the girl standing by the cake.
You all right?
Yeah.
Okay, you need Kleenex? Or...
No, I don't need it yet.
Okay.
Relatives say there's no truth to the rumor she died after breaking her hip on an unusually heavy chunk of guacamole.
No.
Yeah, these are all chip jokes.
Yeah, it's sad, man.
Carranza's Los Angeles tortilla shop was the favorite of many celebrities, Mark.
Uh-huh.
Eddie Rochester Anderson, who played Jack Benny's valet on radio and television, would often buy a bag of her chips and then swallow them whole to create his horribly painful voice.
That's right, Mr. Benny.
What the hell was that?
That's my Rochester.
Oh, really? I never heard him. I don't know what it sounded like.
Get on with it!
Carranza requested her remains be passed around at a party and then stored in an airtight plastic bag for freshness.
Yeah. You need that Kleenex?
Oh, yet? Yeah. God. Thanks a lot.
Sure, give it a blow.
Oh, God. A lot of mildew in here.
Clean that mic off before the morning.
Yeah. Robert Rich, inventor of non-dairy whipped topping. Robert Rich, inventor of non-dairy whipped topping, died last month after a short illness creamed him.
Oh. Come on.
Creamed him.
Yeah.
Rich's non-dairy products had their origins during the first food shortages of World War II.
Yeah.
When large amounts of milk products were sent overseas to help make German supply routes soggy.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, man.
No, it's I'm a little choked up. I'm a little choked up. What are you doing?
Made with soy protein, sugar, and corn syrup, Rich's cream could remain frozen for more than a year without spoiling or degrading its ability to turn a generation of Americans into obese idiots who would actually sit through an episode of Ozzie and Harriet.
Yeah.
Yeah. You ever do that?
Yeah, it was before my time, I think.
Rich is survived by lots of children and a beloved wife who, like his whipped topping, required little or no prep time and spread easily. This has been this week's weekly remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Mortensen saying, "Who's chopping onions?"
Oh, yeah, it's great to have you back, Mort. It really is.
Oh,
it's great to be in California. We got a few calls lined up here. If you want to call in, it's 877-520-1150. 520-1150, 877-520-1150. That's Progressive Talk, 1150, of course. I'm very much looking forward to talking not only to Wild Bill Dyke in New Orleans at some point. Greg Proops is going to be here later in the show to riff it up a bit, to noodle on about what's going on in the world. But more importantly, in just a couple minutes, Josh Olson, the screenwriter of A History of Violence, who was nominated for an Oscar, the Oscars are Sunday, is going to be here to talk to us about his film and hopefully a little bit about what is bad, how bad is bad, and when is bad irredeemable? It is the Mark Maron Show. It is night one, and I'm glad you're here, Jim.
Oh, it's a great honor, Mark. And,
yeah, so let's come back with Josh Olson. Just a second.
You're listening to a man who blatantly ignores bird flu precautions, Mark Maron. To Anderson Cooper's butt boy, Mark Maron.
What is that? It's 35 past the hour. Thanks, Jim, I guess. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show. It's Progressive Talk, AM 1150. Welcome aboard. The phone number is 877-520-1150. If you'd like to give us a call, here's some good news, folks. The latest CBS poll shows that Bush's approval rating is at 34%. This is an all-time low for just about any president. That's down from 42% 1 month ago. You want to know what Dick Cheney's approval rating is in the same poll? 18%. So what I like to do is I figure that most of the people that like Bush like Cheney, or at least they acknowledge that Cheney is probably running the country, or else they think that Cheney is running Bush, so they don't like Cheney, but they'll forgive Bush. They're all crazy, but I like to average the two together, and that makes it 26%. And by my math, with that average, that means about 74% of this country is finally waking up to reality. Let's take a couple of calls. We're going to talk to Josh Olson in just a second. He is the Oscar-nominated screenwriter of A History of Violence, one of my favorite movies of the season. But let's talk to Kent in Los Angeles. How are you, Kent?
Hey, I'm great. I'm so much better now that you're back on the air. This is amazing. What a great day.
Oh, thanks, man. Thanks for calling.
You're the best, man. It's just, I felt like one of my DJs was missing, and now the world seems balanced again. I feel like we can get up and fight again. Thank you so much for coming back.
Right on, Kent. Thanks for calling, buddy.
Welcome to the West Coast.
Thank you very much, man. All right. That was a nice call, I think. Let's take one more call. Hey, how are you? JD, what's going on? Oh, no, it's Tony. What's up, Tony?
Oh, is it me?
I think so. Was it JD or Tony?
It's JD.
All right, I'm just figuring out how to work the machine.
That's cool, man. I am so stinking stoked you're on the West Coast.
Right on, man.
You know, you're the guy that put the neocon death cult into my lexicon, brother. I'm all for you.
All right, well, thanks a lot, JD. We're gonna keep taking down the neocon death cult. They're never.
All right, man, brother. Take care.
Take it easy, buddy. All right, man. How about let's talk to Sanchez in Montebello. What's up, Sanchez? How you doing,
brother Marin?
Hey,
good
man.
To hear from you again.
Well, it's a pleasure
to
be back.
Are you going to be in contact with Future Mark by any chance?
We're hoping to get Future Mark on here. You know, he's been kind of hard to get hold of. I didn't have the right phone. You know what I'm saying?
Well, listen, I'm another one of those progressive freaks.
Yeah.
I'm a remote viewer and part-time mind surfer.
Oh, good.
And I just happened to bump into Future Mark in the future, and concerning your opening day, he's telling me, what the hell are you doing?
What do you mean?
Well, he says that you should have waited at least one more day.
Yeah.
It's going to be a very rough start, but it's still going in the future. So.
Okay, good, man. All right. Well, thanks, Sanchez. I appreciate it, buddy. Bye. Take it easy. All right. So, it warms my heart, and I mean that by all seriousness. I am very excited to be back on the West Coast. You know, when I left the West Coast, we were here on the air, you know, in the morning, but it was very early in the morning for most of our listeners. But when I left to go to New York, I'd only lived in my house like 6 months. And I barely got to know my house. I barely knew that I lived there. And now being back, I just realized what an incredible money drain a house can be. It's unbelievable. It's the first house I ever owned. I when I bought the house, I really didn't realize that when you bought a house, you didn't have to have all the money. That's how immature I was. I really figured that my friend, somehow or another, just got suitcases full of money. But let's get to the guest, and you know, I'll ramble on about myself. I have nothing but time to do that. We're going to talk about the neocon death cult. We're going to cover all of it. Our guest right now, though, is nominated for an Oscar. He's going to be there this Sunday. He is nominated for the screenplay, for the best adapted screenplay, I imagine, of A History of Violence. Josh Olson, thanks so much for coming down to our premiere show here.
Thank you for having me, Mark. It's an honor to be part of your premiere show.
And you're wearing your Oscar sweatshirt. Did they send you that? Do you get a package from the Oscars?
You get it at the lunch. It says in black, it says nominee. You have to look very closely.
Uh-huh.
And, my girlfriend said when I got it that I couldn't possibly wear it anywhere. But I thought on radio, you guys are outing me anyway. I can wear it here. So this is the only time I've ever worn it out of the house and probably the only time I ever will.
You know what? You can sell that on eBay.
I think there's laws. I think if I do that, I'll be tracked down and shot.
What if you gave it to me and I sold it on eBay and I said I found it at the gym?
Then they do the same thing to you.
And
I thought I lost it the other day, and I thought, oh, my God, what happens if, you know. Because you have to sign like 8 pages of paperwork, if you win the Oscar, all the things you can and cannot do with it.
With an Oscar?
Yeah.
But that's
I assume, I didn't read all the small print, but I'm sure the sweatshirt's in there
The same thing as the sweatshirt?
Yeah, right.
And do not lose hoodie. If you lose hoodie, you will be put in jail. You will be renditioned to Pakistan if you lose
hoodie.
If you
see somebody walking down the street wearing it and they haven't actually been nominated, they can go to jail too.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
So now, I found your movie to be very compelling because I myself, and I don't want to get into the nuances of the movie just yet, but when you wrote it, what attracted you to the material and what was that material?
Well, the material originally was a graphic novel by John Wagner, who's the writer, and Vince Locke, the artist. And it was a fun kind of pulpy little action thing. And it's a long story about how I ended up getting onto it and so forth, but I ended up kind of essentially plagiarizing it. I got hired by New Line to adapt it. I essentially said, what would I do if I had come up with a premise
okay.
and a title, which was the guy in the diner. Guys come in and rob him. As a result, he gets this notoriety that leads to people who may or may not be from his past.
Right.
And then I kind of changed everything from there.
Mm-hmm.
And what appealed to me was, and I heard you earlier talking about it, and I love that you got it, because a lot of people think the movie is, and obviously the title may confuse them, but I get a lot, you know, I read a lot of stuff about, you know, the violence, and
right.
we're trying to see something about violence. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, honestly, I think what we're saying about violence in the film, you could write on the head of a pin. It's really more about... you know, the nature of identity, and as you said, the nature of sort of, you know, what is bad, what is good.
And what is redeemable, what makes a person redeemable.
Yeah, does anything. You know?
Exactly. And does it matter? That's a big philosophical question, is what can you get away with and what should you be able to get away with, and who the hell to say the difference? If you know, it's a complex movie. And when I first saw the title, A History of Violence, my first thought is like, what is it, some sort of weird overview? Does it start with cavemen? And you know, what is it? And then
that would be more than 90 minutes.
It would be. And then people started talking about it, and I knew nothing about the film, but when I saw it, in Cronenberg, I don't know what your relationship is with him, but I spoke to him on my other show, on Morning Sedition.
Yes.
We had a great conversation. I remember none of it, but he
was brilliant, I'm sure.
Oh, he was completely compelling. He was completely brilliant, and a lot of the themes from his movies that he likes to do, the sort of weird symbiosis between sex and violence, between the way human beings pound up against each other. It was all in there, but this was the most human film that he ever did.
Yeah, I mean, I think so, sure. There's certainly a kind of strange warmth to it that's absent from some of his films. But if you look at Dead Zone...
That's a great movie.
Yeah, people all sort of accuse David of being cold, and then you go back and you actually see the films, and on a kind of case-by-case basis, there's a kind of real warmth and humanity to them.
That's true.
David's wonderful. It was the most incredible creative experience I ever had working with him. And
yeah. Now, when you go, what was your first experience when you saw the movie? Did you have to go to a theater? I know you did.
Yeah, I saw it. The first time I saw it was without a score. I saw it with Howard Shore. I'm sorry, it had a temp score, which is, mm-hmm. you know, they've taken music from other films.
You're talking film talk. Temp score?
Yeah, temp score is they take a score from other films just to get a sense of what will play in the scenes.
So your movie was on, and it was like...
Exactly, yes.
Wrong tone.
But it was the finished cut, mm-hmm. and I saw it. It was great. I saw it over at the studio, and the screening was just me and Howard Shore. And it's very strange because I had done – it was my first studio assignment and my first studio film. I did a bunch of straight-to-video films that I'd written.
Straight-to-video? That sounds intriguing.
It's not as intriguing as it sounds.
We'll get into that in a second.
Sure.
So you're sitting there with Howard Shore.
So we're watching the film, mm-hmm. and I had never seen – I shouldn't say this because I did direct one of them. I'm very proud of that. But I'd never seen a film that someone else had directed of something I'd written that was anything but horrible. And I thought, you know, here's the moment I've been living for my entire life. I finally get to see, because my God, what a cast we had. And you cannot ask for a better director than Cronenberg. And, you know, they nailed it. And I remember talking to another friend of mine who had a similar experience a few years back with sort of, you know, his first film that was made very well.
Yeah.
And we both agreed that you don't get to sit there the first time and go, oh, my God, it's great. The best you can do is go, well, they didn't screw it up.
Yeah.
And which is frustrating because I wrote the film because I wanted to see it.
Yeah.
And sort of I'm too familiar with it.
But it
was clear that they'd gotten it. But it was a very – the second time I saw it was at the Cannes Film Festival.
Okay.
And it had time to sort of affect me. Seeing it with an enormous audience was really helpful. You got a sense of how it was affecting people, and it was sort of this...
Those actors, man. I mean, were you on the set? Or did you get to hang out?
Yeah, I was up there for about a week and a half.
So you got Ed Harris, you got William Hurt, you got Viggo Mortensen? Viggo Mortensen, who's intense. All those guys, just the weird, intense, troubled masculinity of that triad is enough to be compelling to anybody. Maria Bello is great, but I didn't include her in the masculine triad. William Hurt is also nominated for Best Supporting Actor.
Yes, he is.
He was one of my favorite actors early on, and then he kind of drifted and got kind of peculiar and didn't know where he kind of floundered around for a while, and this role just is like bam, there's the old William Hurt that you always grew to love right there back in front of you.
Well, I remember when I went up there, I scheduled my trip very carefully. There was no writing to be done on the film because it was done. They were shooting a finished script, which is unusual. So I was invited to come up anytime I wanted, and I thought, let me try to schedule it just right. So I came in on the last couple of days of Ed Harris and the first couple of days of William Hurt and got to see everybody work and meet them all. And William was great. I remember having lunch with him, and he talked about how he just sort of renewed his commitment to, you know, just doing the best work he could. And you really had a sense that he kind of like, you know, he was he maybe had lost track of what he was trying to do for a while.
Yeah.
He'd be the first person to say this, and he was really back and really committed. And I thought, that's great. You never know. It's the first time I met him. Maybe he says this on every film. Who knows?
That's kind of his style, though, is to be constantly lost track. He always seems a little, like, always finding his way, but he was great in this movie. Now, I want to talk to you a little bit about, you know, some of the other stuff you did, but you were just featured in an article in the Los Angeles Times with my wife, Mishna Wolf, who is a friend of yours, and you guys are part of this weird, I don't know if you travel from coffee shop to coffee shop, but my wife is actually involved in a network of coffee shops that have Wi-Fi so she can work on her projects. Now, this is a whole subculture that I'm not familiar with because I can't write anywhere. I'm lucky if I can spit four words out, you know, anywhere. But I tend to like to write at home, but you write at a coffee shop.
Yeah, I just found writing at home is very hard. I find to me, everything is about tricking myself into doing the work.
Right.
And if I get up in the morning and I go into the study, you know, I'll get into email, I'll get into going on the internet and doing all this, you know, and I can't even explain it, but it's really hard to write. But if I get up in the morning, I think somehow I'm hardwired, even though I spent my entire life. I mean, I tell people I write, this is true because I don't want to work for a living.
Yeah.
But somehow I'm hardwired to get up and go somewhere.
Yeah.
And, so you get up, you shower, you get in your car and you drive somewhere. I can do that. I can handle that. And now you're there. You got your laptop, and you feel like an idiot if you sit there with your laptop and don't do anything. So it's a way of kind of tricking myself into writing.
And aren't people just walking in, going, "Are you going to be? How long are you going to be sitting there?"
I mean, it's a nice, you know, I have ADD like a madman, so I need a little hustle and bustle around.
Oh, sure.
So I can't go to a library.
That's unbelievable. Because I talked to my actually she's on the phone right now. Should we get her on?
Sure,
Mishna, you there?
Yeah. Hey,
what's up, baby?
Not much.
I'm here with your buddy Josh Olson. Now he has vouched for you in terms of the you know, writing at the Bourgeois Pig, but in terms of you, like, I'm going to this other place. We don't have any clarification on that.
Oh no, he's a morning writer.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, that's it. Josh is done at noon.
Oh, really? Is that true, Josh?
Yeah, I can only write for about 3 or 4 hours a day.
This is inspiring to anyone who's out there. Oscar-nominated screenplay was written at a coffee shop. That's inspiring to me. So you can vouch for my wife in the morning.
I can vouch for her in the morning. I don't know where she goes in the afternoon. Whatever she tells you, I'm sure is true.
Happy anniversary, baby.
You too, baby.
Happy anniversary, Mishna.
Thank you.
All right, I'm going to talk to Josh now.
Do it up.
Okay, talk to you. Do it up. All right, we're going to be doing it up. I love my wife. Wasn't that nice? She just
tried. That's lovely.
So tell me a few of the movies that you wrote that went straight to DVD.
Oh, God. Well, the first film I wrote was a turkey that came out as On the Border in the mid-90s, starring Casper Van Dien, if you remember him. I
don't think I ever knew him. I cannot even access him.
Starship Troopers.
Okay.
And he played Tarzan, believe it or not. He looks like a Ken doll, and he played Tarzan. He's a lovely guy. But
have any of those movies that you wrote early on achieved cult status of any kind?
I like to think, well, you know, none of the ones I just wrote, but I did write and direct a film called Infested, which was a remake of The Big Chill as a horror film. And it's done okay on video, but Empire Magazine called it one of the 25 best straight-to-video movies ever made, which I guess...
Oh, that's it. Well, that's pretty good.
And a lot of people on the internet hate it, so I guess that
counts for something. As long as they're giving you attention and you can handle that attention, what's important.
Usually they seem to be the ones who don't get it. I'll read stuff like, this guy's ripping off this movie called The Big Chill. Like,
they don't understand that it was on purpose.
Yeah.
As long as you're not sitting in that coffee shop writing those guys going, you didn't understand it, man. I think you should really give it a second chance.
It's tempting every now and then.
So Josh Olson is our guest. He is the screenwriter of the Oscar-nominated screenplay for A History of Violence. He's going to stay with us a few more minutes. We are also going to have Greg Proops later on to the show. You're listening to Mark Maron on Progressive Talk, AM 1150. It's 50 past the hour.
And now back to a man who's benefited from three face transplants, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. It's 54 past the hour. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. I am Mark Maron. That is Jim Rowe. Our guest is screenwriter Josh Olson, who will be at the Academy Awards on Sunday, where his screenplay for the film A History of Violence has been nominated. We're going to finish that conversation in just a second. I want to try and get Wild Bill Dykes on the phone again down there in New Orleans at Mardi Gras. He said he might be a little crispy, but we should try him on his cell anyways. Bill Dykes, the comic. Hey, is this Wild Bill Dykes?
Yes, it is.
It's Mark Maron calling.
Hey, Mark Maron. What's up, buddy?
I'm not much, man. How you doing?
I'm excellent, man. I'm sitting here on Decatur Street acting like a fool. What's up, buddy?
I just want to know how it's been going. Why don't you tell us what's been going on down there the last couple of days?
You know, in the typical madness, you you know, Mardi Gras, people acting fools, a lot of crazy anti-FEMA humor.
Were there any anti-FEMA floats?
Yeah, there was actually one. It was Cruz de Vue a few days ago.
Yeah.
The float came by and said, FEMA says beads coming soon. And they were like, all the people on the float were going, we have no beads. And they weren't saying anything.
So how what do you think the turnout is? About how many people?
I don't know. Actually, you know, it's a lot more than I thought it would be. It's a very local Mardi Gras. A lot of the locals are going, all out, because I think everybody down here feels like they have to put on the best show in the world. And there's a lot of out of towners. The hotel room situation is kind of crazy, but
so the sadness was transcended for a few days. Mardi Gras did its job.
Yeah, I mean, it has to. I mean, a lot of people don't understand that. You know, they're like, how can you do that? We have to. This is part of the culture. This is part of what New Orleans is. And if you don't do Mardi Gras, you're basically saying we're dead.
I'm happy y'all did it, and I'm happy it went so well, Bill, and I'm looking forward to seeing you down there in April.
Yes, April 7th, man. It's going to be bad.
All right. Thanks.
We're going to have a good time, buddy.
All right. Thanks for talking to me, Bill.
Take care, buddy.
Bye. I can't wait to get down there to do that gig. It's going to be a good time. We're doing a big benefit down there in New Orleans, April 7th. Our guest in studio here is Josh Olson, the screenwriter for A History of Violence. Now, the Oscars are on Sunday. What happens? You go out to dinner. You go. What happens?
Yeah, no, I think I got to be there like 3:30 or something.
You got to be 3:30 in the afternoon.
Yeah, I got to be there at 3:30. And I hop in a limo with my folks and my girlfriend and, chugging five blocks.
Coming out. You got your tux. You're all set.
Got my tux. I'm all set.
So I'm excited for you because I think you're going to win it. I think the film deserves to win it. I think that anybody who has not seen A History of Violence should, because it's a very interesting movie. It's very provocative. It's dark, and it makes you ask questions about yourself. Now, I have a past, but certainly not as bad as that main character had. But no, I'm not going to divulge anymore. Good luck with it, Josh Olson. Thanks for joining us here on the show. In the next hour, we're going to have Greg Proops on. We're going to have maybe some more music from my buddy Jim Earle. I'm thrilled to be here. 877-520-1150 if you want to say hello. It's the Mark Maron Show. We'll talk to you in a second.
Live from Burbank, California, founded a century ago on over 4,000 acres of sheep droppings, it's the Mark Maron Show. And now the sea is his mistress, Mark Maron.
Yes, the sea is my mistress, Jim Earle. Welcome to the show, geniuses, philosopher kings and queens, working class heroes, progressive utopians with no sense of humor, and of course, you lurking conservatives. Good news, as I said before, Bush's approval rating at 34%. Makes me kind of scared, though, Jim. I'll be honest with you. But I am happy to be back in Los Angeles. I'm happy to be here in the bunker at the Burbank Studios here looking over NBC just outside the window. A beautiful view. We can watch Jay Leno walk out of the building. I'm glad that you're here with me. You can call us at 877-520-1150. You can also go to markmaron.com. That's markmaron.com to get information. We're going to have Greg Proops out here in just a couple minutes. Let me take a quick phone call. We've got a couple people that have been waiting there for a while. I want to say hello. Tony in Ontario, what's going on, buddy?
Hey, great to have you back on the air, man. We were listening to you from on the over the internet podcasting you guys when you were in Morning Sedition. It's just great to have you back. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much, Tony. It's great to be back. I'm glad you're listening. Take care.
You too.
Okay, bye. Yeah, people are being very nice. We've got these beautiful flowers here from Sally in Burbank. Am I getting it right, Sally? Of Burbank.
Sally in Burbank.
She actually wrote Sally of Burbank. So, folks, we here at the Mark Maron Show want to make positive contributions to society. So every night we bestow an honor upon one distinguished citizen whose actions most closely represent those of our esteemed vice president. Without further ado, we present the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. All right, today's Dick of the Day, Peter Hickok. Peter Hickok, an ironic name, but his real name, a man who lives in Scottsdale, Arizona. On Sunday, his five-year-old daughter found him laying in his driveway bleeding. Okay, so the cops come. This cat's blood alcohol level was so high that he could have went into a coma. He had a 0.345% blood alcohol content in his blood. At 0.35, you go into a coma. All right. So that's I think he was just shy of going on a hunting trip. But the sad part is his 5-year-old girl finds her dad like that, and the cops get there. They look in the fridge. All he's got in the fridge is peanut butter and bread. That's a classic alcoholic father there. He's just like, yeah, you got enough to eat, kid. You're all set. What else you need? You got protein. There's some juice. Didn't even say if there was juice. Now I'm going to go in the driveway and bleed. So congratulations, Peter Hickok. You're the Mark Maron Show's Dick of the Day. Oh, there's one now. So, folks, look, you know, this has gotten a lot of play, obviously, all over the mainstream media. That's a word they use a lot here on Air America. The mainstream media. Have you been mainstream mediatized? Look, we know that the United Arab Emirates was directly associated with bin Laden as recently as 1999, and they did not freeze al-Qaeda's assets after 9/11. We know that the UAE does not see Israel as a nation. We know that two of the 9/11 hijackers came through the UAE on their way to attack the U.S. We know that the company seeking the deal is not a private company, but a state-run company by a state that was with, in quotes, the terrorists. We know that Bush Sr. and his cronies from the oil days and the Carlyle Group stand to make millions and millions of dollars off of this deal. We know that there will be no congressional investigation because Bush doesn't want it, and he broke the law that requires a 45-day investigation into the deal. We know that the investigation into the deal by the United Arab Emirates itself is meaningless and just a stall, and it's the only way that this deal is not going to go through is if Bush puts the kibosh on it. Now, what are the odds of that, really? There is momentum. There's actual bipartisan momentum to try to make that happen. But this guy is a stubborn bastard. So I'm scared, folks. With the blow monkey puppet of the Cheney regime's neocon death cult's approval ratings coming in at 34%, who knows what the hell they'll do? Who knows what they will do to get back on top of things? Now, obviously, these approval ratings, I don't think that they can come up much, much higher than they already are. They're going to fluctuate around this level from here on out. But who knows what they're capable of? See, I'm one of those paranoid freaks. I'm one of those conspiracy theorists, but I don't like to call it that. I like to call it an independent speculative investigator that thought it was complicity through negligence that brought 9/11 on us in the first place. So I don't know what these guys are capable of, especially when they're down to this level, and that this deal is correctly being stifled by the people of this country and by a lot of people who represent the people of this country, and this president is not going to let that stand. And I'm scared, man. And I'll tell you something. I drove out to Desert Hot Springs with my wife last weekend to get a little R&R before I started the show here, Jim. We stayed at the Sagewater Spa, beautiful small spa run by these two lovely women, and we drove into Joshua Tree, and there are all these small desert towns out there like Yucca, seemingly untouched by modern sprawl and blight. Now, this is a funny thing. We get into the national park, into Joshua Tree. My beautiful wife puts Aaron Copland on, all right? And literally, I started to think about things. You know, I started to think, hey, man, maybe we should homestead. You know what I mean? Maybe we should pull this Camry over and stake a claim and start building my cabin, Jim. Park rangers be damned. There's no fear of terrorists out here in the desert. There are no traffic jams out here in the desert. There is no employment out here in the desert. But who needs a job? I'm going to run my cattle and my horses and dig the well and whatever else the hell you do out there, you know, chickens, goats, cast iron skillets, you know the drill. So we drove back into town for lumber and rations. But you know what, Jim? I couldn't find a general store. But there was a coffee shop there in Yucca. So we went in, and my wife had a latte, and I had a cafe Americano and a scone, and there was a girl with hot pink hair there. You know what's weird is if you build the coffee shop, Jim, they'll come. So we regrouped a little, and we decided we could just maybe buy a little house close to the coffee shop where they have Wi-Fi. Because, as you know, as Josh Olson said earlier, my wife likes to work at coffee shops. All I'm saying, man, is sometimes you settle. Cows on the range, or maybe just a cow screensaver. You know, it's all right. It's the modern world. Maybe I'm not cut out for the desert work. But in light of the port situation, I am terrified, and I don't know. And we had this conversation off the air once before, you and I. I really don't know. You know, I don't really know what the hell to do. You know, what do you do? Are you prepared?
If the big one hits, if somebody has a nuclear device and detonates it in Long Beach or something?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I am completely scared now, and we ought to be scared, because not only does this deal with the UAE represent, you know, something, some horrendous cronyism, some belligerence on behalf of this administration, but it represents, it reinvigorates that idea that I got to sit here and think that they, none of that stuff is taken care of. None of that stuff is really monitored. You've lived in San Francisco. Mm-hmm. We've lived in New York. You drive over the Bay Bridge and you see all those containers. Who the hell knows what's in them? And I, now I'm walking around and I'm driving around Los Angeles with that horrendous fear in my head that where the hell am I going to go? So there's part of me that's thinking about going to the desert, man.
Well, you're half right. Go to the safest place on earth, Crawford, Texas.
That's right. That's right. Give us a call, folks. 877-520-1150. What would you do? I mean, I know I'm being crazy, but I'm starting to think that the desert is the place to go. Joshua Tree is stunning. There are these little towns. They are seemingly undeveloped. And I'm not talking about running scared. I'm not running scared. I would like to see this deal stopped. I would like to see this administration out. I do not trust this administration in any way, given their past history. But I'll tell you something. You might have a little more time if you're out in the desert. Am I wrong?
No, but what are you going to do that to Native Americans again?
Yeah, why not?
Push them out of the desert again?
Sure, why not?
My God, what are you saying? This is your first night.
What? No, I'm not going to.
My God, I can't believe what you did.
I'm not. No,
do we have a 7-second delay?
Wait, did you just ask me if I was going to push Native Americans out?
No, yes. You got to listen carefully.
I'm sorry. I was looking at the phone board. I'm not going to push Native Americans out. I can live with the Native Americans. I can live with the Latino people. I can live with the cowboys. I can live with. There's all kinds of little enclaves out there. And I'll tell you something. I'm looking forward to making my way out there, if that's all right. If that's all right, I'm going back next weekend. I'm going to go back to the Sagewater Spa. I'm going to sit there. I'm going to meditate. And then I'm going to go up into the hills. I'm going to buy a piece of land and drop a glide house right on it. And I'm going to build a bunker underneath it, just like your daddy did there, Jim. Jim Earl grew up with a bunker underneath his house.
It wasn't a bunker. It was a, what was it? A bomb shelter.
What the hell is the difference?
Well, it was something. He was taken for a couple thousand dollars. It would have protected nobody. It would have done nothing.
What do you mean he was taken? You mean somebody came and sold him a bomb shelter?
A lot of people went into the bomb shelter business back in 63 during the Cuban Missile Crisis, and they sold, you know, bomb shelters in the suburbia to people who didn't know any better.
Oh, look who's walking in. You know that face. Look who just walked into our studio.
It's Greg Proops.
Greg Proops.
Hello, everybody.
Comedian Greg Proops. People, you know him from Whose Line Is It? Thank you for stopping by. It's very nice of you. I'm glad you came in. Sit down. We're talking about fear, Greg. We're talking about fear. Do you live in fear?
I rarely experience that because I'm shallow and self-absorbed. My only fear is that I won't succeed on the level that I deserve and that other people will don't deserve it.
How's that going? Do you think that fear that you just described right there, which is my almost every waking moment, is somehow stopping where you want to go, stopping the path to the direction you want to be taking?
Quite possibly. I hadn't thought it that far. What I thought of was that other people were doing better than me and that somehow that was stopping me from getting forward.
So it's the other people that are in your way.
I'm almost certain it is. And the people that make the decisions, because they're not smart enough to see the shining genius of my ideas.
Well, I think you're a genius. We're talking about port security a bit.
I'm joking, of course, for the listeners who've just tuned in. I know some of them are liberal.
Yeah.
And so the sense of humor can be a little wonky sometimes. This guy's really into himself in a Terry Gross way, I think.
Believe me, you're on the right show for being into yourself.
Yes.
I like that your glasses are constantly tinted. I've always appreciated that about you.
I don't want to see the crowd. I've told them this as well. In a dark nightclub with the tinted glasses, you can barely see them at all.
Now, let me ask you something. You're from San Francisco. We're all from San Francisco. When you drive over the Bay Bridge, I lived there for a couple of years, and you look at those containers, do you have the moment? Do you have the moment where you're like, what's in the containers? Are you afraid?
Well, there being that there's virtually no security anywhere in any waterway system in the United States.
Exactly.
I have had that moment. I don't think I dwell on it as long as you do. If you didn't have gainful employment as a comedian and radio personality, I dare say you might drive that van that used to go up and down Van Ness that says John Lennon was killed by the CIA at the behest of the MI5 and Bigfoot was complicit in a...
He was. I don't know what the hell's so funny about that.
Well, that's the thing. Yeah. So I don't know that I'm as paranoid about the containers, but I do love the Dubai deal because it combines audaciousness with stupidity, and those are my two favorite When your political stock is this low, to crack that one out that clearly is going to align both sides,
audaciousness,
like nothing else could.
Audaciousness with stupidity. It's that weird line that George Bush lives on, the difference between stupidity and courage. It's all a matter of what actions you take.
Who would do at the end of a 2 months of bitch slapping from everyone who would go, by the way, we're going to let Al-Qaeda run everything now. I hope that's cool with you.
Not a problem, man. Yeah. Just let that container on by. Yep. Why is it talking? Hey, Jim, are you going to play us out of this segment?
Oh, yeah.
Is that going to happen?
I got a special song here.
Oh, it's a special song for the San Francisco crew.
Lovin' Mark is easy because he's beautiful. Doot-doot-doo. Come on. La-la-la-la-la.
I can't sing my own song, can I?
La-la-la-la-la. La 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 la.
877-520-1150.
You're listening to a man who, when threatened by predators, can inflate his body to within three times its normal size. Mark Maron!
And now back to a man who once sailed around the world in his three-masted schooner, the Snark, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. Thank you. It's 23 past the hour. Welcome aboard. It's Progressive Talk AM 1150. You can go to markmaron.com. That's markmaron.com to check in with the show. We're taking calls in a minute, 877-520-1150. If you'd like to talk to my buddy Greg Proops is here.
Hello, peoples.
From Whose Line Is It Anyway? I watch that show sometimes. I got to be honest with you. You're the funniest guy. You're the funniest guy on the show.
Thank you very much.
I'm serious.
I appreciate that.
And you're also on a new show. What's the new show you're on?
We were on a show called Green Screen.
Yeah, that's the one.
I don't think they're showing Green Screen much anymore. I think you're better off with Whose Line Reruns at the current juncture. And, of course, my fabulous live schedule, which is all-encompassing.
What do you have a website?
GregProops.com.
There you
cleverly
go.
Eponymous.
Oh, very nice. Now, here we go. Let's do this soon. You know, I find that it really seems to help when I write things down, folks. And lately, I've been writing all my thoughts in the form of letters. So if you don't mind, I'd like to share with you my latest letter to God. Are you there, God? It's me, Mark. Do you like me? Really? Be honest.
Okay, define like. I mean, come on, Mark. They're all types of likes. I mean, that's just a hard question to answer, you know? It's an indefinable thing, right? I mean, what does anyone really mean by like?
Like, as in affection.
Okay, no. I don't like you. Happy now? Why do you always have to push things?
Oh, okay. Thanks, God. I guess. Isn't that touching? Isn't that touching, Greg Proops?
That's sweet, man. I love that you reach out to the higher power.
Jim Earl is here from back in the day. Can I tell the story that I always like to tell about my first... I was with Greg Proops. There used to be a show that was out of San Francisco. It was a morning show called The Alex Bennett Show. And generally, they'd have three comics on that show to, you know, help Alex along. And by the time I got there, Alex basically just sat there saying, I'm sick. I think I'm sick. Are you sick? Do you feel sweaty? When do you get
There's
your prostate
a bulging
checked?
And under my left arm. And
so that was the entire show. And they used to do live shows. And one time, Greg and I were on the show. I think it was me and you and Matt Weinhold and someone else. And it was down at Cobb's Comedy Club. This is 6 in the morning. Greg comes up to me and says, hey, you want to smoke? So at that time, I said, sure, that sounds like a great idea, 6 in the morning to smoke some Greg Proops pot. So I did that. And I don't think
you
I
will be.
Yeah.
You will be.
I don't think I said an entire word the entire show. I sat there paralyzed with fear and Greg just saying, what's the matter, Mark? How do you feel? You feel good? And I think that was the morning that you actually said to me, I invented you, Mark Maron. Yeah. That was a good day. Really
appreciate
it.
You were glassy eyed, man. You know, from the movie Half Baked, you were an extra in that movie.
Those days are so far behind me, I can't even remember what pot looks like.
That was a good time.
I'm not being righteous about it. about it.
No, I don't blame you. It looks like Lucille Ball's hair. Flaming red.
The stuff that you get. I know the riff.
Took you back.
I definitely do. Know Jim Earle from back in the old days when he was with the vaudeville team Lankin Earle.
I was just doing one of his routines back to him based on your letter to God. Lankin Earle used to do a very funny What If God Hosted a Radio Show routine.
Can you hum a few bars?
Of course.
No, I can't do that.
Why not?
You're crazy. It takes two people.
Well, Greg's right there.
You have to get Barry Lank. You know,
there is a union thing with Barry.
Oh, that's true. There actually is a union thing with Barry. Yeah.
My favorite line was, you go, this is the almighty, this is the deity, this is the all-knowing and beginning and the end. I can't remember the exact words. I'm God. I'm hosting tonight. Let's take some calls. Hello, you're on the line. Yeah, is Dave there? No, this is God. I'll call back when Dave's there. That was my favorite.
He used to be funny.
I'm still funny. You just don't let me.
He had a...
He's already rebelling.
Rebelling?
What are you talking about?
Do I have a collar on me now?
No, I don't know what the hell that's about.
I don't know.
I'm so glad.
I just want to say it's a great honor being here.
Oh, my God. This is only going to get better. As this relationship unfolds, I can only see this getting better. We got a few calls lined up. Some people want to say hello to Greg. It's 877-520-1150. If you'd like to call us... Again, I keep looking at these lovely flowers. You see these, Greg? Sally of Burbank sent me these flowers.
Those are perfectly charming. What a wonderful launch to your new career here in Los Angeles with James.
I know, with James Earle. Isn't it wonderful? And she was a fan of the morning show, and I think I'm just going to leave these here. I hope Stephanie Miller likes flowers. I don't see how anybody could walk into the studio and see those and go, oh, great. Great!
Who left this colorful bouquet of uplifting
things?
What
a bastard! All right, so we'll be back with Greg Proops in just a minute. Jim Earle is here. And that's what's going to happen. Give us a call, 877-520-1150, LA's Progressive Talk.
And now back to the guy VH1 never calls for those list shows, Mark Maron.
Thank you, Jim. You're listening to Progressive Talk, AM 1150. It's 35 past the hour. That's Jim Earle. My guest tonight is Greg Proops, a comedian. You've seen him on Whose Line Is It Anyways? You've seen him on Drew Carey's Green Screen Show. He's doing a live show down at Largo.
March 28th.
A live talk show with?
John Bryan is the band. John Bryan won a...
Genius.
Kanye West won a Grammy for Best Album, and Bryan produced that album. Kanye West said, I'd like to thank God and John Bryan. I want to thank John Bryan for making me a better person. Oh, and my mother.
That's so interesting. I've got to listen to this record. I've never listened to it. I've got to listen to it because he's like a pop genius, right? He's done great soundtracks. He's done incredible production work. Who else does he produce?
He did a couple of tracks for Fiona Apple, and then she did another producer album.
Oh, right, that record.
Yeah, Rhett Miller has a new album out, and he did a song on that. Marianne Faithfull did a record last year, and he did, I think, the best song on the record because it's so weird and moody and... He did Huckabee's, I Heart Huckabee's soundtrack, Magnolia.
Genius guy. We got a couple calls. Let's take a couple calls. These people have been hanging out, and they seem to want to say hello to you. Philbert in Los Angeles, how are you, buddy? What's going on?
I just want to say hello to you, Mark, but I have an issue with Greg. I saw him perform recently. I'm not going to say where because I don't want to give my whereabouts, but he was making fun of Dick Cheney, and I just want to say I'm a Republican, and Republicans, we've been taking a lot of heat these days.
Come on, are you serious? Are you serious?
Am I serious? Hey, listen, I'm talking to Greg here.
Oh, that's unbelievable.
Listen, I went to a couple of shows, some friends dragged me in, and Greg was putting down Hunters, he was putting down Cheney, he was putting down Republicans. We've been taking a lot of heat these days.
Thank God. It's about time.
You people have been calling us like...
Oh,
God. Greg called us corrupt, he called us incompetent.
Good.
He called us mercenary, and he called us...
You're characterizing... First of all, I didn't say any of those exact words. Well, and secondly, I dare say that you're hazarding that you saw me lately and that I made fun of Cheney rather than... Specific, since you won't say where you saw me, and I know where I've played in the last 2 weeks.
Philbert, come on, you got to be honest. How can you not take the
comedian,
heat?
Yeah.
How can you not take the heat? It's become ridiculous. The fact that you're a self-admitted conservative still, given the crap storm that you guys are taking, which you deserve, with all the evidence that's out there, how could you even be proud to call yourself somebody who would be a Cheney apologist, even as a reasonable conservative? How can you even be proud to call yourself that?
Well, I think there's just bad perception.
Oh, come on. Bad perception.
I think it's really essentially a communications issue. We just haven't been able, we just haven't been good at promoting our real agenda.
Oh, yeah, you guys are really having a hard time with promotion. You guys, you're hilarious. You guys,
let me, can I ask a question?
Hold on, Filbert,
Greg, you unfortunately were making fun of Republicans being homophobic. But the problem is that we haven't been able to get our agenda across because we've been...
That's hilarious.
May I ask you a question, Filbert? What would you have me make fun of? I'm a comedian, and Dick Cheney shot someone in the face and then didn't report it to the police, for 18 hours.
No, we don't need to waste time with him. Because Republicans...
What am I supposed to make fun of?
Republicans are homophobic. Dick Cheney is an evil bastard who's been proven to be the most secretive.
I am not saying we're not homophobic. What I'm saying is that we have been distracted from that issue when we really should be focusing on
you should just be trying to focus, period.
Thanks a lot.
Thanks, Silver. Thanks a lot. Thanks a lot, buddy. That's all right.
I can prove that was not Greg Proops.
Go ahead.
Empirically.
Did you tell Filbert to tip his waitress over?
But you know what's hilarious is this guy is saying he...
Then it was him.
I don't even understand.
He's right.
I don't understand. That guy couldn't be for real.
I think
he was. I think he was for real.
Well, I played New York last week and Chicago the week before. So you might have seen me in either of those two places. But the fact that he was unwilling to say that. And two... Honestly, my job is to tell jokes, and whoever is powerful, so bite me.
Yeah, you don't even have to. Yeah, but we don't even have to apologize to that guy. What kind of moron? You know the Cheney's approval rating today is at 18%.
Is it really? That's exhilarating.
It is exhilarating. But that guy is one of 18%, which must mean he didn't seem like he was a mentally challenged or retarded. But I don't see how anybody can defend the conservative agenda at all.
He's with
the evidence that's out there.
He's a rebel. 18% popularity. The guy's got to be a rebel.
He was saying, we just need to focus. We're having a hard time getting our points out there. Our propaganda isn't working. Thank God. It's about time. Let's take this call. That guy's been hanging on for a while. Mike in L.A., how are you?
Hey, I wanted to talk about this shocking and disgusting lack of leadership that we're seeing right now.
Thank God.
Last night, when Mike Dunleavy took Elton Brand out of the game in the fourth quarter, I mean, when are the Clippers going to learn that if they're going to compete in this game, they got to rely on celebrity and star power?
Mike, you got to call back tomorrow when there's people here that understand basketball.
All right, I love you, Mark Maron.
Thanks, buddy. Take it easy.
Nice one.
That was a good one. Clippers talk, fella. The Clippers talk. That's on here a lot. Now, are you a huge baseball fan, yes?
I am a huge baseball fan, yes.
Now, when does that season start? I wish I was programmed to
quite soon. April.
Who's your team, man?
The San Francisco Giants. I'm from San Francisco. So our team is very aged this year. We're represented by the AARP. there is going to be complimentary Walker and a Rascal Rides to First, is my understanding. Not that I've been working on this at all, but...
Ramps.
Ramps, yeah.
Can we learn something about Jim Earl? Now, are you a sports fan? Because we don't know each other that well, and I have nothing against sports, but I don't respond to them as most males do.
There's a reason we don't know each other very well, because you're standoffish.
Mm.
But other than that, sports?
Yeah.
I don't know. You know, I really do like sports, but there aren't any... I don't believe there are real sports going on anymore.
Yeah. What does that mean, Jim?
I don't know. I don't know what the hell I'm talking about.
You're right. In the old days, they had sports like jousting and whatnot. And that was awesome.
Oh, man. Filbert's right.
Filbert is right. Their message is being obscured by the amount of corruption. That's distracting me from the message.
I've never heard a conservative actually try to make that argument that our message is being obscured. That was the lamest attempt at a conservative trying to stand up for himself that I've ever heard in my life.
I like the idea that going to a comedy show and then complaining that the comic was making fun. Well, I think you'll find that if I don't make fun, it's more of a lecture than a comedy show.
Yeah, that would be my comedy shows occasionally.
I've seen your show.
No, I don't. What I usually do is I fester about myself, and then I get everyone at the existential breaking point where they're about to, they do that weird cry laughing where they're like, and then I throw a little politics in.
And then
I drain them like a pain sponge, Jim.
Pain sponge.
Pain sponge is Jim's favorite word. Let's take this call from Matt in L.A. What's up, Matt? What's on your mind? Let me push the button. How are you, Matt?
Yeah, hey, Mark, congratulations. I'm so glad you're back.
Thanks, man.
I would wake up early in the morning to hear your show. And I saw you at the Upright Citizens Brigade a few weeks ago. And this is your forte, radio.
Thanks, so, man.
But listen, I got a suggestion for these conservatives. I'm a lawyer, and I was my family is all located in Texas, and all Republicans and conservatives. So
it's a law to be. It used to be a Democratic state. Were they always Republicans and conservatives?
No, LBJ.
Sure. No, but I mean your family always Republicans.
Oh yeah, yeah.
So how do you handle that?
But not all of them, but my immediate family. Well, here's my suggestion. Mm-hmm. I discovered it because we took a drive. We got hit by Rita, the second hurricane. Mm-hmm. So we took a drive from Dallas down to visit my dad. And I had my brother-in-law, who's a real conservative guy, who thinks he knows about global warming, but, of course, he knows nothing about it.
Mm-hmm.
So I used the Socratic method with him, and I recommend that. Start by asking them what they know, and you penetrate. You know how everybody has these filters? You hear Janine talk about, rant and rant. We can rant and rant and rant.
Sure.
But people, unless you make people realize that they don't know what they don't know, it's sort of like Donald Rumsfeld. He did sort of make sense. There's the things we know.
Yeah, I know what you're saying. Right.
And
so what you'd call there's a little language problem, but he was just getting comfortable. But that's a good point.
He was a lawyer?
Yeah. When you get comfortable.
Because he lost me at hello. Counselor?
Bring back Filbert.
No, but
Filbert was concise.
I think
it made sense.
I think there's something interesting happening, though. Do you have any conservative friends? Now, I do,
actually. I have a couple of workmates that are conservative, and one of whom I would be in a foxhole with, quite frankly, much more than some of my liberal friends.
Now,
but it's just simply a matter of we don't just take it up all the time and have at it,
No, they don't like to talk about politics. A lot of them hide it.
He'll bring up something weird occasionally, like he'll go, yeah, Bill Clinton did the thing.
Clinton.
Right, and you go, but that was ages ago.
Yeah,
history is George Bush.
I think the approach now to take is if you have conservative friends, you should really just say, I'm concerned about you.
Yeah.
I'm a little concerned.
Haven't you noticed with audiences, though, especially in the last year, I think, they go bananas now. I mean, where they used to be more reticent and give you the ooh on Bush and Cheney, now, especially with Cheney, it's just open field running and everybody's into it. And I always use that as the barometer because I'm shallow and everything revolves around me. So
that's not true. You're a very provocative comic, and you take chances up there. And the truth of the matter is something has turned, and I think people were afraid for a long time.
Weren't they just?
Yeah, to laugh at Bush. And that was what killed me. I'm so glad that they didn't succeed in defeating comedy. Because comedy, the history of comedy is by and large liberal reactionary, at least since the 60s.
Yeah.
That's what's funny, is fighting these idiots.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, when Clinton was president, I believe we all made Clinton jokes for 8 years.
Absolutely.
So it wasn't like we went, well, everything he does is good, and then everything. It's not a matter of that.
It was fun spirited. You got to remember that. Now we seek to
peace and prosperity.
Yeah, we seek to take this guy down.
Well, yeah, because he's been an evil raccoon for the last 5 years.
34%. That's what his approval rating's at. 34%.
I heard what you were saying earlier, and I think it's true.
Yeah.
They have three. They've left themselves too much time. In one way, they will limp to a close on this. Someone's going to go, whether it's Cheney or Bush. Because they've simply left too much legal time to get something going. And they've hit rock bottom, I think,
they
in
absolutely
a lot
have.
Of ways.
I think they're going to hang Cheney out to dry. I think that all of a sudden those 250 emails between him and Libby show up out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Hey, guess what? Like a week after he blows some guys in the face, he just hits them with the shotgun. I think they're going to hang him out to dry. They're just trying to figure out who to stick in there that's going to be a good candidate to run against Hillary.
I couldn't agree more. Someone has got to go in that they can move forward. And I think that this even might even be part of their plan, that they had no intention of letting Cheney stay for the second term because, one, he's too unhealthy. But now after these hideous turns of events the last couple of months, it
you
seems
that,
clear that.
But how conspiracy minded are you? Do you think they plan to have Cheney shoot that guy in the head?
I wouldn't go that far, but
I'm tired of giving these guys credit because that's a weird thing that we do is that we always second guess ourselves and we're like Rove is probably making it rain.
Yeah,
so
I know it gets a little too weird. I think it was a drunken afternoon,
absolutely.
And all, but I don't. I do think that it serves their purposes to put someone in that they can run.
Yeah.
And that they can run against Hillary specifically. So.
Now, are you going abroad at all anymore? Do you go?
I do. I was in London 2 weeks ago. In fact, when the Cheney thing happened, I was in England. And it was, I think what they reported was he was on a tri-state crime spree and had knocked over a stop-and-go in Oklahoma City, had taken hostages, and was armed and dangerous, terminated with extreme prejudice.
That's probably where Philbert saw you.
Different take in England.
So now, when you go abroad, is it? Were you? Did I talk to you about this? Were you actually deported once from?
I was. Yeah, I killed a guy in a town called Scunthorpe. Uh-huh. And thank you. And I was forced to leave for a brief time, and then I've been back since then. They seem to have forgiven me.
How does that look when you're deported from somewhere?
Well, I wasn't physically. Well, the thing is, I had to wear like one of those little soft caps yeah. and carry a valise, and I wore a suit with no tie and a little collarless shirt,
boy.
And I trudged up a plank, and Lee Woolman was with me. Horrible experience. It really, really was.
But that's going to be released on DVD soon, right?
They got my name wrong. Uh-huh. My name is Carson, but yeah. somehow the town I'm from is Proops, yeah. and so when I said where I was from, like in The Godfather, they yeah. wrote Proops on my...
Wow.
Yeah, it was pretty hectic.
That is incredible. So, Greg, so you're going to be at Largo March
28th. Yeah, so if you're streaming, I'm in Cleveland, I believe, in the week after next.
GregProops.com. You're listening to Progressive Talk AM 1150. Thanks for coming. Come by again, will you?
My pleasure, pal. Good luck. Happy launching.
Almost any night you can come. We'll be back with Jim. We'll be back with the closing statements. We'll be back with the short order news. So hang out. 49 past.
Stay where you are, because I'm looking at you through the bathroom window. Oh, and Mark Maron's short order news is coming up next. And now, back to the man who was caught driving with Britney Spears' baby on his lap, Mark Maron.
Yeah, that was me. It's 54 past the hour. This is Progressive Talk, AM 1150. This is the Mark Maron Show. This is day one. I think it's gone pretty well there, Jim.
Very smoothly, like a clock.
Like a clock? Are you kidding? It was perfect. I'm kidding. Yeah, I'm probably going to go home and fester and call people. It's like, did you listen? Was it okay? Did you listen? Did you hear me talk to that guy? Did you listen? Me and Jim were on. Did you hear Greg Proops? That was good, right? Greg was funny, wasn't he? Right? Did you hear Josh Olson? Greg Proops, actually, before he left, took a Al Franken book, Lies and the Lying Liars, who, how's the rest of that title go? Lies and the Lying Liars You Tell Them, says someone, I lent this to someone, they brought it back. Here, maybe you guys want to read it. Like, there weren't, literally, back in New York, there were hundreds of those laying around. But this one's rare now because Greg Proops actually signed it. He signed it. Isn't that nice?
Right.
Did he sign it to you, Jim?
No.
Okay.
No.
So a lot has happened in the world today, and we want to make sure you're caught up on current events before you go to bed. So here's tonight's edition of Mark Maron's Short Order News. According to a new book, President Bush admits that Osama bin Laden helped him win re-election in 2004 by releasing a videotape just 3 days before the election. Bush said the most helpful part of the tape was Osama's diatribe against stem cell research and protecting the spotted owl. Anna Nicole Smith appeared before the Supreme Court today in an attempt to inherit part of her late husband's billion-dollar fortune. Later, the former Playboy playmate went to the Lincoln Memorial and, out of force of habit, sat on Lincoln's lap. The Rolling Stones will hold their first ever concert in China this April. The Stones are admired throughout Asia, whose culture reveres the elderly. Of course, the elderly joke on the Stones. You know, it's weird about Anna Nicole Smith. I hope to God she wins. I really want her to have that money. I have such a weird contempt for people, for the sons of rich people who want to deprive her. She did her time. He loved her. She deserves that money. I think she should have whatever.
Loved her. He couldn't even see her.
That's all right. But, Jim, let her have it. I'm tired of them. Everyone calling her a stripper. She did work. She worked as a model.
She's already got $6 million, two homes, and God knows how many jewelry.
I know. But I want her to get it. I just think that would be hilarious and great. Hey, tomorrow, folks, we're going to go deep inside Scientology with a reporter who spent 9 months getting unprecedented access to the church and its leaders. Plus, Sammy the Stem Cell will be here. Go to markmaron.com to check out our players page for info on all our regular contributors. I want to thank Brendan McDonald, Brendan P.W. McDonald, Jason the Wisconsin Jew, Jim Earle. He's the Jew from Wisconsin on the board, and we'll talk to you tomorrow. You're listening to the Mark Maron Show.